Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Sujit DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. Today we are recording episode 325 on April 22nd, 2020. We will be talking about our HPC high performance computing offerings with our special guest, Evan Burness. On the Teams call today with me, I have myself, Cynthia, Sujit, and Kale. And before we go into our special guest, we will go through a round of Azure updates as usual. Kale, I see that you put some links in. Do you want to get started?
Yeah, sure. So the first one is around Azure Archive Storage. And again, just like we do in a lot of podcasts, this is an announcement around some GA features. That have actually been already in preview. Kind of interesting stuff if you've been paying attention in the storage space to the temperature of your storage. And this one pertains to the archive storage and how the rehydration happens, which basically means like as you're bringing that stuff back out of, we'll call it the freezer, maybe you haven't touched it in an offline state, how quickly you want to heat that stuff up. And so basically you can pay for kind of retrieval options there of like standard or high priority. And obviously this depends on, you know, the size, like how many gigabytes or things like that that you're pulling out. So there's a really nice kind of write-up about this, and there's some links to the rehydration documentation to talk about that. There's also, you know, different things around the upload direct for hot, cold, and archive. There's some stuff around the copying logs and some of their API specs and things up there. So, you know, if you're into, and most people are paying attention to this today because this can cost a lot of money. So figuring out, you know, what things you need to have kind of archived away in case you need them in the future, but you probably won't touch them that much. It's super important to kind of consider this.
Yeah, I like this announcement because this is something very close to folks in the financial services where I work. A lot of my customers need cold archive storage for compliance reasons. For example, often they have to save even logs for 7 years at least, so that in case somebody later on, you know, tries to sue the company, they can go and pull out a log for that period of time and defend themselves in court. So this is something that allows them to have super cheap storage, you know, obviously, savings, you know, terabytes of data for 7 years can cost a lot of money. In this particular case, you're putting it in archive storage is very cheap. And the downside is that when you need the data, it could take up to 15 hours for Azure to get it for you. But with this new update that Kale's just talking about, you can now pay a little more money and in your request, and you can, in fact, get the data in 1 hour. So those are some of the updates that we just announced.
Do you all know if there's integration with like our e-discovery offerings? Because now everything you're talking about, I'm like, oh, isn't that a lot around like retention?
Yeah, it's an interesting question though. Like if, because this is like a low level thing, like our API for storage. Be interesting to see how that kind of impacts. I haven't seen that a lot in like products like, let's say like O365 or something. Not talking about your mailboxes, but like other applications that could be built there, even by our ISVs offering these options to say, hey, when you're building stuff over here, you can now have this flag that toggles it to put it in archive storage after so much, you know, if it's not been touched. Pretty cool. The other thing I had up there real quick was around learning. This is not a blog post or anything, but it's, I just wanted to draw attention that this site has, and the content up here is really pretty awesome stuff now. I mean, they've done a lot of work on this over the past, you know, short period of time. But basically, they have a lot of learning paths and modules up here for, you know, people who are at home right now because of COVID. And, you know, you want to learn something new about AI, Power BI, you know, some Azure fundamentals. The stuff's all up here and it's free and it's pretty awesome content. So I just wanted to draw attention to that, and we'll drop the link in the show notes, but super valuable stuff if you want to learn something new while you're at home.
Another update I wanted to talk about is the automatic instance repairs for VMSS. As you know, today, if you have a virtual machine scale set that has X number of instances, the load balancer will monitor each of the instances using the health probe that the instance exposes. The application can expose something specific in that health probe. And if the health probe returns something other than an HTTP 200 code, it can take that instance out of rotation. Now they've added the self-repair option where it won't just take it out of rotation, but will actually shut down the machine and delete it, I should say, and create a brand new instance of it, right? That's the nice thing about VMSs, is that you can just create additional stamps off the same image that was used for the other instances in the VMSs skill set. So this way, you can kind of repair each of these instances as they go bad. In case there's a software bug, the system crashes, a particular instance crashes, you take it out, you bring up a new one. This way, you're not running in a degraded state, which you would have in the old model.
And there is one last thing that I also put in there, that address port API is now generally available. With the support API, you are able to create new support tickets. Right now, the majority of the experience is driven through the Azure Portal UI. But now with the API, you're able to create tickets, get a list of current tickets that your subscription has open. You're able to filter them by status or the created date. And you're also able to update severity, status, and contact information programmatically through the API. And I think that is a good round of updates. Evan, can you introduce yourself to our listeners, who you are and what you do at Microsoft?
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me on the podcast. It's nice to join you all today. My name is Evan Burness. I am a program manager in Azure Specialized Compute. And I lead our efforts around the H-Series virtual machines, which are Azure's sort of focused offering on the world of high-performance computing.
So just to get started, what is high-performance computing, and what are some of the usual use cases that we would associate with HPC?
Sure. So high-performance computing is, in a broad sense, an overall world where researchers, engineers, scientists, data scientists are all trying to solve very complex data-driven problems using sort of the latest technology that they can get their hands on in order to essentially understand or solve or simulate a problem that if they try to do using non-computational methods would either take an unreasonably long amount of time or simply would not be possible. So you're basically saying it's a big umbrella term to describe things that mankind sort of needs computers for, especially the most powerful ones, the ones that are built out at very, very large scale, so that we can innovate faster, find answers to critical questions faster. In terms of workloads that one might see within the high-performance computing space, it's quite diverse. For a very long time, the largest use cases were simulations of physical phenomena. Think black holes in outer space. Think a car company that wants to understand what happens during a crash test simulation. Think of something like an aerospace company that wants to understand how its plane will stay in flight given a variety of changing conditions in terms of wind or weather, things of that nature. Think of things like a weather organization that is trying to understand what is not just the weather going to be like over the next week, but think of things like disaster scenarios where you want to understand, well, there's a hurricane in the Atlantic Ocean. It's coming toward the United States. What is the impact of that going to be? How do we understand this as well as possible so that we can prepare ourselves? So disaster preparedness is a very common driver of high-performance computing scenarios. But it's also, like I said, very key to organizations innovating so that they can understand various kinds of problems faster than they would otherwise. You see a lot of organizations invest in high performance computing to try and get a competitive edge over their peers within a given industry. You see it often used in academia for researchers who are trying to distinguish the impact of their work because they can computationally prove something that they would not be able to prove experimentally as in the physical world. And then within the last handful of years, I would say HPC has really almost expanded its base to include what we all talk about, you know, inside of Microsoft, you know, quite a lot, which is the world of AI, machine learning, machine intelligence, deep learning. What those workloads are doing under the hood are at one level different because they're not simulating a physical phenomena. There's no first principles of a computer algorithm understanding, is this picture a cat or is it a stop sign? But it is nevertheless stressing the computer in the same kind of ways that a more traditional physics-based simulation might. So HPC is a very vibrant and diverse space to be in. It's used by pretty much everyone in every vertical that you could imagine. So it's a very exciting place for Microsoft to be in because it's one of those areas that we know has enormous impact on the world. And so for us, it means a great opportunity to have impact on our customers.
So one question I had about that, Evan, is so when you talk about HPC, is this software? Is it hardware? Like, what's the experience for a customer who says, yes, I have a high performance workload? Are they looking for VMs or are they looking for some sort of framework or what does this look like?
It's a whole stack. Yeah. The real answer is it's the whole stack. Let's go sort of by piece. Yes, there absolutely is a software component. Any piece of hardware is simply a means to an end. So any piece of hardware is a means to an end. The software is obviously sort of where the rubber meets the road. Usually the customers that are coming to us, they're looking for the hardware assets themselves because oftentimes they will either have an open source application, an application that they either themselves or inside of a company will have developed on a proprietary basis, or they're using some licensed application. These applications can span all manner of scientific and engineering domains. I'll give you an example. There's a widely used software package called Ansys Fluent. Fluent is a package that does simulations of fluid dynamics phenomena. If that sounds like a very niche thing, it's actually not. It's super common because fluid dynamics is basically anything that is what you think of as a liquid or gas, which is a pretty big part of everything in this world. So it is relevant to anyone from, you know, a Procter & Gamble, where they're trying to understand essentially how detergent flows inside of a bottle or inside of a washing machine, to an aerospace company that is trying to understand how air passes through a jet engine, to a energy company that's trying to understand how energy reservoirs are pushing their way through porous media miles below the surface of the earth. What happens in all of these cases, though, is the organization that's coming to Microsoft will typically have one or more applications that, like I said, is simulating some version of physics-based phenomena, or more recently, may not be physics-based, it may be a data science-based AI or machine learning workflow, and they're looking for a set of hard assets, which on Azure would be our virtual machines, that will run their software not just very, very fast on a per virtual machine basis, but commonly can run an entire workflow much, much faster by scaling out the problem over many, many servers or virtual machines in this case at a time. That process is enabled by a software technique that we do provide and we support called MPI, or message passing interface. that is a way essentially of basically head faking out a software program into thinking that multiple discrete servers are one giant big brain server. And that really, really helps when you're trying to solve problems that are much more complex than even the world's most powerful single server can solve on their own. So in our case, we have to really be responsible for supporting the full stack of what the users need, their software scenarios, the hardware they need, the scale out networking, and then the domain expertise of the actual field that these folks are doing all of these things from.
So, Evan, I wanted to ask you, I work with a lot of financial services customers, and we do a lot of risk analysis for them using these high-performance computing systems. We use software like HPCC, which is an open-source application that can run these large data analytics. One of the things that has come up often is the issue of hyper-threading, right, of VMs and how that impacts HPC. I was wondering what your take on that is.
Yeah, it's a good question. So in the world of high-performance computing, applications, that we have this umbrella term, HPC, but the truth is that there can be big variability between one class of HPC application versus another in terms of what's the best hardware configuration. That being said, one scenario where generally we see consistency is that HPC applications prefer to have hyper-threading disabled. On our H-series virtual machines, we actually only offer it with hyper-threading disabled. Because like I said, these are a set of virtual machines that, as opposed to a lot of what you'd find in Azure, which is designed to be broadly competent at dozens of different kinds of workloads, our task is to be more tactical and focused in terms of really optimizing for a specific set of workloads, HPC ones. And so for that reason, we disable hyper-threading on our H-series virtual machines. And that does return material benefits in terms of best performance, best consistency of performance. It simplifies some software development things for software developers, whether from the open source or the ISV world. And it can also have benefits in cases where commercial software licensing plays a big factor in the end-to-end TCO analysis that an organization would do.
That's really great. Yeah. Another thing that kind of has come up a lot is the networking requirements, right, for MPI. They typically require very, very fast interconnects between servers. Is there something special that these H-series offers to kind of give these types of applications a little bit of a boost on the networking side?
Yes. And I'd say that is arguably the distinguishing factor of our high-performance computing VMs on Azure. We invest a lot in our specialized networking specifically to support HPC scenarios. So while you will, every Azure virtual machine has a really wonderful Ethernet interface, on our HPC virtual machines, we specifically add a second physical network based on InfiniBand technology, which can offer much, much higher levels of bandwidth, much lower levels of message latency, and much, much better dynamic management of packets in flight. That's really the key thing that if you were to say, what's the one feature that at a macro level really distinguishes the H-series virtual machines from some others in Azure? You'd probably point to that. And to give some very specific numbers on it, just so that it doesn't sound like I'm just talking in vague abstract terms, you know, your typical Azure accelerated networking is around 30, 32 gigabits per second. That's very, very good. And that's a very common level of performance you would see in a cloud. Our latest HPC virtual machines have 200 gigabit per second networking. So you're talking about over a 6x improvement in bandwidth. And from a latency standpoint, our latencies can go as low as 1 microsecond. Typically, cloud network latencies are much closer to the range of about 10, 15, 20 microseconds. So you see more than about an order of magnitude improvement just by taking a very focused look and saying, for these class of applications that have very specific needs, are we really designing our programs, our infrastructure, to the needs of these workloads and by extension, the needs of our customers? And so, you know, one of the things we announced when we announced the general availability of our latest HPC virtual machines, the HBv2 virtual machines, was we showed some scalability results. And part of the reason we do this is so that we can show the HPC world, a space that has existed vibrantly for many decades now, and that the cloud world is moving to intercept and to show that it has a place in the HPC ecosystem, that we can support and do very well at some of these HPC workloads. It's important for us to demonstrate that we can run very, very demanding problems, not because every customer will be running those problems or even that the customers who do will always run their most demanding problems, but there's a trust building factor to doing those kinds of demonstrations, especially with real world applications, with simulations or input files and models that HPC customers can look at and say, yeah, that's a real test. That's not like a gamed test or some meaningless synthetic benchmark. We took a model that was authored by NOAA, the American Meteorological Agency, and we scaled it on HBv2 to more than 80,000 physical CPU cores, which is about a little more than two times larger than anything that's run on a government-funded supercomputer that we can find in the published literature. And nice. So from that standpoint, again, the purpose is not to say, oh, every customer is going to run an 80,000 core simulation, but when you're able to show that to people, they really understand the value of how you have thought through the end-to-end architectural needs for their applications, and that we are prepared to support them in production on Azure.
Yeah, one question too with this is that comes to mind is quantum, right? So as you talked about these really high performant computers and these fast interconnects and things, I'm interested, is that something that the HPC space in general is also like heavily involved in, the development of quantum compute?
So I'd say yes, and I'd say they're not. I think you have the right understanding there, which is that high performance computing term is more of a umbrella term for those who have been pushing the capabilities and architectures and innovation of computer technology for decades now. And what you've seen over time is this space evolves because the technology of the day evolves. And so what is the great latest and greatest canonical technology or approach to solving big problems today in a computer may not look the same that it does 10, 20, 30 years from now. No differently than it doesn't look exactly like what was going on 10, 20, 30 years ago. And so quantum is an area that obviously Microsoft invests a lot in, and there's a lot of attention and research and basic research going on in there. It's not a technology that organizations are using to solve practical problems today. They may not be doing that for a very long time, but the fact that Microsoft is investing in it so heavily today, that we're open sourcing so much of what we're doing in this space, we're collaborating in many open consortia on quantum computing, that is part of a bigger picture thing that Microsoft is doing, where we're really trying to both send a message, but also substantively show customers that we are here to support the kinds of problems you're solving today with the latest and greatest technology that is available today, but we also want to be your technology partner over time. And so we are investing in a number of these groundbreaking areas so that as these technologies mature, as the software ecosystem for it develops, as people start to figure out what kinds of problems map to quantum very well over time, that Microsoft is well positioned to help its customers continue its journey into those new areas of technology innovation.
And I'm curious, when these customers or users that you work with, do they already have HPC in mind when they start developing, or is that a gradual process of, oh, I think I am reaching the limitations of what a usual compute unit can't do, and I need to leverage another type of infrastructure instead?
That's a really good question, Cynthia. It's definitely the latter. And the reason I say that is because as much as those of us in high-performance computing love the field, love building, you know, the world's most powerful computers, the fact is at the end of the day, all of this is a means to an end. It's not the end itself. The thing that really matters is the workload the customer is trying to run, because it has some material real-world impact to them, to their stakeholders, to customers, to government officials trying to make the best policy decisions, to companies trying to make the right decisions around innovation. So the HPC is all a means to an end. And because of that, if you were to step back and say, how does an organization get into high performance computing? They're not doing it, they're not starting from a premise of, oh, I need to get into high performance computing. They're starting from a premise of, I need to go solve this problem, or I need to know what the answer to this question is. And what they find is eventually that the most, or perhaps maybe even the only viable way for them to do so is to leverage high performance computing. So it's a very, very complex, very exciting tool in the toolbox is the way I would say it. And like all tools in the toolbox, it's all about, you know, right tool for the job, use it where it's appropriate, use it when it's appropriate, don't when it's overkill or it isn't the best, you know, tool for the job. One of the things that we talk about, you know, with our customers is, look, we have a lot of powerful technology. We can make a lot of things go faster, but we'd love to understand if you say, well, I have this HPC application, what's even the broader context or broader workflow you're doing this in? Because if we optimize to the nth degree, you know, one particular application that they're running, that's great. We will help you do that. But we don't want to do that in such a way that we are minimizing, say, the time spent on one area of a workflow. Meanwhile, five other things have become the long poles in the tent, so to speak. So for us, it's really about these customers have problems to solve. HPC is a tool they have to go do so. And let's make sure that we're understanding the right broader context so that we're helping the customer solve that big picture question.
Now, I know typically, Evan, when these new SKUs come out, the capacity may not be what we want in all regions. What's the process for customers to get access to these SKUs? Do they have to, are they just freely available, or is there some kind of process they have to go through?
The process is no different than it would be for any other Azure SKU. You simply raise a quota request on Azure to get access. Probably the biggest difference is because these are very specialized resources, we tend not to deploy them as broadly as we would Azure programs that are specifically intended to be general purpose offerings, something like the D-Series. D-Series will send to basically every corner of the globe specifically because of its flexibility. In other words, in any given region, for any given customer, something like D-Series is probably going to be a useful tool for at least something that they're doing. Whereas in the case of HPC, it's a much more specialized, self-selected crowd when you're looking at, say, industrial verticals or government verticals, things of that nature. So for us, you'll see our H-Series rolled out to fewer regions. We invest more heavily in the regions where we do deploy them because we know that there's a critical mass of HPC users in those areas. But overall, in terms of how you just get access to them, it really is no different than any other VM type in Azure. It's a simple quota request.
Awesome. That's great. Thank you.
Evan, is there a hybrid HPC story given the need for very short latencies?
So it depends what you mean by hybrid. Can you give me a little more specificity there?
So say I am a company that currently owns some HPC infrastructure on-prem, and I feel like I'm not getting enough computing power, and I want to try it out on a cloud and see how it works instead of just purchasing new hardware. Is that a possibility?
Yes, and that's a very common cloud scenario as it concerns HPC. If you sort of go back over the last 5-6 years and you really sort of closely track how HPC usage has occurred on the cloud, a lot of it has been in those sort of burst scenarios, either because, as you said, an organization thinks about the cloud relative to their on-prem investments, and they say, well, I know that, you know, we're never going to go below this floor in terms of the amount of work we have, and therefore your amortized infrastructure investments on-premise are the best way to meet that. We have a fixed compute need. We have fixed computational assets. Let's match those two together. But then on the other hand, we have variability throughout the month or throughout the year. And what we really want to pair that up with, that demand with, is a HPC supply that can grow and shrink with that as well. And so customers do bring a lot of that to the cloud. Azure offers a lot of really good tools for enabling those sort of burst on-demand scenarios. Anything from our Cycle Cloud product, which is a really, really great way for organizations that have been running HPC on-premise, and they have a lot of existing software frameworks like job schedulers and specific operating system environments, such that they can really take everything they were doing on-site and in a very nimble and agile way, bring it into the cloud to enable, as you said, that burst hybrid scenario, to Azure Batch, which is a really cool way of provisioning and managing infrastructure and executing workloads in an API-driven way. So it's, in some ways, it's a more cloud-native, developer-centric way of doing those burst scenarios. And then also, I call out our investment in a program called Azure HPC Cache, which is a really critical tool for caching data that customers would have on site that they can't, in a very effective way, immediately provide to virtual machines in the cloud. But if they use the Azure HPC Cache service, they can cache that data that is probably starting out on some version of an on-premises site in Azure, very close to the compute resources, so you get much better performance for your storage I/O needs in the context of the application, because the compute is the actual compute time where the processors are churning is obviously a very key part of the end-to-end wall clock time, but it's not the whole thing. You have to move data in and out of those compute resources. So Azure HPC Cache is a really great way to attack the end-to-end wall clock time that sometimes organizations haven't really thought about as they're coming to the cloud for the first time.
Really amazing stuff, Evan. Thank you so much for bringing us up to speed on all this HPC updates. Very excited to hear about the H-Series. I had heard about it, as I mentioned, working with some of my financial customers. I think they're looking forward to it. So glad to get some clarity on what it brings to the table. Cynthia, any more questions for Evan before we let him go?
I don't have any more. Thank you so much for coming to the show, Evan.
You all are most welcome.
And send us some links to some of these so that we can put them along with the recording.
We'd be happy to.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.